Thank you for taking the time to download and listen to this free podcast from Celtic Underground. You can subscribe and like and listen to your podcast wherever you pick up your podcast feed. You can also subscribe at theCelticUnderground.substack.com, where you will get email notification of new content as soon as it is out. And you can subscribe for free. There'll be plenty of free content, articles and podcasts. But also, you can pay a small subscription and you'll get extra special content. Anyway, enough of me. On to today's free podcast. I'm joined this week by Ross Hall. Thought we'd have a conversation about, we spoke to Ross actually after the end of the summer transfer window, so thought we'd better speak to Ross after the end of the January transfer window to get his value judgment on it.
Please don't mistake that for expertise.
So yes, how are you doing? How are you doing, Ross?
I am good, Brian. How are you?
I'm excellent, thanks. So, January transfer window, wailing and gnashing your teeth in some quarters, kill your kegs in the other quarters.
Guilty at times.
So I'm going to tell you the two thought processes going through my head, and then you can then take it forward as to the pros and cons of both and which one you think is more likely to be right. So one thought process going through my head is, it's a January window. It is a more difficult window to get players in. We have added Jota, that we know his ability, and he's an £8 million player, into the wide positions. And we've lost Kyogo, who we knew wanted to leave. We had bids in the summer for him, and we managed to get £10 million for a 30-year-old player. And, we've got an extra player for the wide positions, and if needs be, we can play Maeda through the middle. And I looked at his stats, and before he signed for Celtic, something like 70% of his appearances in professional top-flight football were through the middle. So we've replaced the guy who played very infrequently for Japan with a guy, a centre-forward, with a guy with a backup now being a guy who plays more frequently through the centre for Japan. And, hey, we wanted a striker, but you don't get everything you wanted, and we've got the ability to get it in the summer. And in the left-back position, by left, was doing okay, but never set the heather on fire. Hadn't displaced Greg Taylor. Was clearly a backup to Greg Taylor. He's gone, probably because his parent club weren't happy that he wasn't getting sufficient game time. And we've replaced him with a seasoned professional who's played in the English Premiership, 32 years of age. And he's there, really, until we get to Kieran Tierney in the summer. So in terms of his ability over Baez, I certainly don't see that there's any massive difference between the two. And we know that Kieran Tierney's coming in the summer, so it was about bridging that gap as somebody to break up. So the net position is, hey, it's not the end of the world. Yes, it would have been nice to get extra players in, but it's not the end of the world. The other side of, and we've cleared out some of the deadwood, and we want youngsters to get games. So if you clear out the deadwood, there is more of an opportunity for a Dane Murray to come and play some first-team football for the club, because, you know, we get rid of Welsh, who was never going to make it at Celtic, and we've got rid of some of the other players, who like Palmer, who were never going to make it.
I'm not going to dive in too much here. I'm just going to say we might be getting Welsh back because he's not doing very well in Belgium just now, and I don't want to talk about him in depth later, so I'll just throw that in just now, that Welsh, his start in Belgium has been not the best. Hopefully it will improve.
The other side of my brain says, right, we knew in the summer that we'd agreed in the summer with Kyogo that when the opportunity arose, he would go. So we've known since the summer that Kyogo's going to go. I mean, I've known since November that Kyogo was going to go. We knew whether we signed Kyogo anyway, we were looking for a winger to come in, and the budget for that winger was between £6 and £9 million. So the Jota coming in is because we were after the guy from Valladolid, who did his collar bone in. And because the Wren interest in Kyogo, the Jota thing just sort of happened by luck. Not to say that we don't want him, but to be able to replace, we were going to be signing that left winger anyway. The manager said he wanted a striker. We've known Kyogo's going to go. He goes and we don't replace him. So surely when we've got 80 odd million pounds in the bank, and I'm quite sure but when we announce our end of year figures in June, there's a high chance it'll be 100 million pounds in the bank. This is the time that we should be investing in the playing squad in the January window so that we've got the appropriate squad in place for the Champions League qualifiers in the summer, and they've all bedded in and played 6 months football. So those are the two sides of my arguments in my head. Which one's closer to your position, and is there any merit in the opposite opinion? Take the floor, Ross, on you go.
I think my best route to go through this is, I've taken a note of everything that you said there, is to go through them probably one by one. So first one, you're right, January is a difficult window. However, Celtic seem to make difficult turn into what seems like at times, it's not impossible because we signed Jota and we signed Jeffrey Schlupp. I love that name. Schlupp. Comes off the tongue really nicely. But in terms of the key thing that Brendan Rodgers said from beginning to end was, as soon as Kyogo went out the door, striker. And it's ultimately it's failed. For whatever reason, we don't have a new striker. So you're right, you then look and go, well, worst case scenario is dies and moves in one if required. However, as everybody online is lighting the point out, if anything happens to Adam Ida, and it was brought up in a press conference, Dyson's not available for the Bayern Munich game. Yep. So you're then looking at Johnny Kenny. Now, Johnny Kenny's done amazingly in the Conference League for Shamrock Rovers. Rovers, he was it, wasn't it? He's done brilliantly for them. He's looked hungry in his sort of short cameo appearances. But ultimately, this was a guy that, with the greatest of respect, openly said himself, Celtic ignored him for the vast majority of time he was away on loan. And it was only towards the end of the loan, and all of a sudden his name started to come up because he was being successful in the Conference League, that apparently Celtic all of a sudden remembered who he was. So
yeah,
I'm glad that he's approaching games with a view to proving a point. I've liked what I've seen him so far. So I don't think we're short in the striker position, but when the manager's openly saying, that's the one I want, or that's the position I want filled, and it doesn't happen, and then you look back at January last year that resulted in an apology statement, if I remember correctly, of, you know, we accept that it's ridiculous to have so much cash on hip. And last January, we signed Nicholas Kuhn, who has, you know, initially struggled, but is now firing, playing great. But it just feels like a January transfer window. Yeah, and Adam Ida, got on loan. So, and obviously ended up with them signing permanently. So you're looking and going, actually, last January's window, on the basis of Ida and Kuhn, hindsight's an element of it, because Kuhn struggled initially, but Ida started really well.
Mm-hmm.
But that window was the same as this, or better than this, or, you know, a muchness. There's no, you're splitting hairs on both, because... Yeah. Last January, Kuhn came in. The one thing that Kuhn carried before anybody seen him and started going, well, this is a bit worrying, Kuhn came in on great form. He was one of the top goal scorers, top assists in Austria, top chances created. So when he came in, his form was really, really good. We signed a player that was coming in that, in theory, you're looking at and going, if he brings that form, we've got a great player. Obviously had problems with his teeth and it's taken a wee bit longer. And then you move to this window and you go, well, we brought in Jota and Schlupp. Love Jota. He's came home, would be the way I put it. He's, you know, this is as much a homecoming as it is for when Kieran Tierney comes home. This is Jota's home. This is where he has made himself. You've seen it in his emotion at the weekend. I think anybody who sleeps, that's an idiot. I personally was delighted to see it. I thought, that's a boy who wants to be here. Love it. But if I took the sentiment out of it, we got a winger who we would, as you say, it's circumstance. We would never have got him because he'd only been at Rennes for a few months. And if he'd have been playing well and playing regularly, he would not be a Celtic player today. So circumstances have brought that about, that he went to Rennes and he struggled and the manager disliked him. And he's got lucky and we've got lucky. and he's come home, and he started well, which is a real positive, because you're kind of going, well, he's not played many games. How long will it take? And Jeffrey Schlupp has barely played in the last 6 months. Lots of substitute appearances last season. People say left back cover, which is perfectly acceptable to say, because he has been a left back in his career, but he was a left back when he broke through 10 years ago. And his first two, three seasons through, he played left wing back or left back. In the last 2.5 years, he's never played left back for anything more than about 30 minutes. That's a long time, but ultimately it's cover, it's late in the day. Val, even, I think you're right. I think Barcelona have probably went, we need him to be getting more minutes. And the one thing I would say to any young player of his age is, minutes are golden tickets. The more you get, the more chance you've got further down the line. I don't think he was bad here. I don't think he was great here. I think he had moments, but I would also say the biggest part of that is it's quite hard to judge, because there was never any consistency in the amount of games that he would play consecutively. And that's quite hard for a young player to kind of come in, different culture, different environment, and just go, you know, yeah, I'm a Barcelona player. That's fine. But this is Scottish football, and there's different elements to it. And I thought he'd done well. At times, a few games, I thought a little bit light and a little bit questionable with position and things like that. But I think ultimately he served his purpose. And then Deadwood, you're right, got rid of, or not got rid of much of it, but a lot of it is out on loan or elsewhere. Mm-hmm. I hope Palmer does well, because as much as a lot of people like to criticise Palmer, I think Palmer comes across as a really nice lad. I think the fact that you always see players around him and things like that suggests that he's a good egg. And I think in the right team, he will do fine. It's just his fit with us never quite found his spot here. And then you go to the idea that, you know, they're all gone and youth players like Dane Murray will potentially get games. My own personal opinion with Dane Murray is that it's lovely to see him back, but I wouldn't have brought him back, because he is a boy who has missed the best part of 2 years of football. And I go back to the point of Val, minutes are golden. And for a boy who's missed almost 2 years of football, people might say it's only Queen of the South or him being on loan, but those minutes are the most valuable thing in the world to that boy. And so him coming back to us and sitting on the bench, it's good that he gets the opportunity and that he's done well enough that Brendan wants to put him in that position. And that, you know, he trusts him to throw him on against Villa. He had a wee mistake, but that happens. It's, you know, he's not the first, not the last. It doesn't really mean too much. But personally, from my point of view, I think when we went in the transfer window, I would have said a right centre-back actually would have been something to have been potentially looking at, especially the fact that Naroki is... So far at the picture, it's beyond belief. He's now taken Odenholm's spot in the cupboard that nobody knows where he is.
That was the thing that really struck me when it came to a change needed to be made against Villa. It was Dean Murray that got the nod and not him.
Yeah.
And they were both on the bench.
Yeah, and that tells you everything I think you need to know as to where Naroki is. And I think it's been openly said, and I'm sure... on the latest Celtic Underground blog, I can't remember the name of the gentleman who posted it, apologies, but he posted the fact that, you know, Celtic were looking to get Naroki out on loan. And again, for Naroki, I keep on referencing back to Val, Naroki's still a young player. He's just not a Celtic player right now. He's not at that level. To achieve that level, he needs minutes. Just like Lagerbielka, who's now getting games over at 20, and he's doing really well there because he's playing in a setup that does fit his skill set. He does play a little bit deeper. They like him to ping long passes to the wingers, which is something that he is actually quite good at. And now that he's getting that consistency, you're seeing that in his performances over there. But he doesn't want to play on or over the halfway line for the majority of the game because he's not quick enough to go back the way. So good player, wrong fit, much like Louis Palmer. So that element of part one of what you said, I agree with at all. Kyogo going is a sore point because I love Kyogo, but I understand it. I think it was the right move and he wanted to go. I think Rodgers is banging on what he said, if you've got a player who really wants to go. And by the sounds of things, that they've pretty much said, listen, we will allow this to happen. You can't then be going back to the days of Van Hooijdonk and Cadet coming out, and I'm sure Kyogo wouldn't have, you know, been flogging his story to the sun, but, you know, you've said you can go do the right thing, good offer, and as you say, it sort of instigated the whole Jota thing. So that is more by luck than by design, and that bothers me. But we'll come to that eventually, I'm sure. The second part, as you say, we've known for a long time that Kyogo was leaving. You've known since November. The club are openly saying this was way back in the summer. Some people are saying even previous to that. I'm not sure I necessarily believe that. But in the summer, you've then got, you know, if you know June, July, you've then got 4 or 5 months to come up with a solution. And we haven't. And so, as I say, it's a failure. And I said this to you before we came on. I thought it was quite telling that Rodgers done his press conference. And unlike last year, where he was very open and said, recruitment here is a mess, needs a resolution, and that he was going to try and push that along, he never said anything this time other than, I'm not going to worry about something I can't control. I'm just going to put my focus into working with the players who are here to make them better, work with guys like Johnny Kenny, like Dane Murray. We're going to continue to work with Adam Ida, who's now thankfully hit a good bit of form and, you know, we're up to pace. Brendan said, obviously, working with Ida, who has now hit a good patch of form, which is really a great sign that he's taken on that mantle of being first choice. And he said that in his interview, you know, he wants that pressure, which is brilliant to hear. The winger situation, as you said, Raul Moro was apparently the sort of main target. Unfortunately, he gets injured. And obviously, Ajax were in the hunt as well. So that was never sort of a surefire thing. And circumstances have led to the fact that Kyogo, Jota, and we've got lucky. Let's be honest, that's what that is. That is a very lucky set of circumstances that we have happened to fall into a player that the fans love, that we all love, who's a really good player, that only a few years ago we've sold for 25, 26, 27 million, whatever it was, and we've gotten back for 8. That, you know, thank your lucky stars for that. But when you look at overall, both sides have value. I think overall it's not a bad window, but it's certainly not a good one.
Okay. Firstly, on the youngsters thing, an interesting thing. A lot of chat. You know, you see people saying, I know St. Anthony on our site's very big on, why do we even bother with a youth setup? Because we're not producing the players. Equally, I've heard people make the point, well, have we not produced Pierce? We produced £15 million Doak. Problem is he left.
Yeah.
We produced Vata. Problem is he left. We produced Kelly. Problem is he left. Mm-hmm. In terms of, we produced players that were just about ready, first team ready, and they've gone before we've been able to do it because, you know, one of the things about, you know, this, and so this is not, I'm just saying these are some of the things I've heard. One of the challenges of Brexit, obviously, is that the English scouts are looking in more, and you can see this, the English scouts are looking more in Scotland. And as somebody put it to me, the problem is it's now like swimming in a fishbowl with a shark, in terms of they can just come in. Equally, the argument could be put, we used to be the shark in the Scottish fishbowl if we wanted to be. Because, you know,
we still are, to an extent, in Scotland.
Yes. And then so on that, then I look at it and go, yeah, but right. So my perception of players, now obviously I'm not a brilliant scout to be able to identify, you know, watch a player for 5 minutes and go, yeah, he's going to be the guy. But my perception of players is, particularly young players, and when you mentioned minutes on the clock there, my perception is that a player will improve, and then if you're not taking them up to the next level where they are being expected to perform above their ability or right beyond their ability, they will then just plateau out. And if you leave them at that level too long, then the ability then they just plateau, and the ability for them to then bridge that gap and become the player they could have been if they'd had the minutes goes. So one of my concerns is that my perception is, very simplistically, we have a player at 12 who's playing under 14 because he's good enough. And then under 14 and 15, we then put him to the under 16s a wee bit earlier than everybody else because he's good enough. And then at 16s, we put him to the under 18s a wee bit earlier than we could have done because he's good enough. And then at 18s, we take him to the B team a wee bit earlier than we would have done because he's good enough. And then they plateau out, which allows people to then, and I'm not saying this is right or wrong, I'm just wondering if this is one of the things, which then allows people to say, well, we're not producing first team players because none of those players ended up making it at any decent level. Well, might that not have been the case if they'd actually got first team football, a taste of first team football a wee bit earlier? The counter to that is they shouldn't be getting first team football unless they're good enough to be playing first team football.
Yeah, that's an argument that Aidan McGinney kind of tried to sell him as a punditry gig on Sky. I'm not really sure I totally agree with that, but you obviously know I pay a lot of attention to A teams and the B team. The B team's a waste of time, I'll be honest. I totally disagree with the argument that you do away with the youth system. That's ludicrous.
We wouldn't have a UEFA license if we did for a start. So it's just not an option.
It's a ludicrous idea. Even putting the UEFA license thing to one side, even if it wasn't required to get that, it'd be a ludicrous idea to get away with it because ultimately financial fair play is now a big element. You often reference the fact that we're a player trading club. And that if you sell a homegrown player on your financial sheet, that's put down as pure profit. So Kieran Tierney nowadays would be considered as £25 million profit because he was a homegrown player. So there's that element to it, that you're investing in the club's infrastructure and what that can bring longer term. If people want us to buy bigger and better players, that has to be a part of building up the club's finances. Now, at the moment, the club's finances are in a phenomenal position, but that might not always be the case. We might not make the Champions League one year. Then the picture changes. So, and another part is, if you asked any Celtic fan, and I've said this in something that I wrote for you, is who, if you looked at a Celtic team right now and said, who are the players who represent the club? Who are the first names that are going to come to mind? Callum McGregor. James Forrest. When Kieran Tierney comes back, he'll be one of the names that'll get thrown out as well. And so there's something about the soul of the club, and some people might not buy into that. Some people might be happy seeing, you know, loads of different names like John and things like that. And I love those players as much as anybody. But to me, part of being a good Celtic team is having Celtic players. And there is no more a Celtic player than Callum McGregor or James Forrest. And to me, that's I consider that as a necessity as part of our team. I don't ever want to see a Celtic team that doesn't have someone that I look at and go, he's been through the system. I know that in this day and age where football is predominantly about finances and money for players, that we have a couple of players who just get it. It's there.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need, you know, someone to give them a history lesson on it. They've grown up knowing it. They live it. They belong it. I personally think you always need that. And aside, I think teams who don't have that are poorer for it. So you've got that element. But you're right. The way that players are moved up, so you have a good 15-year-old and you maybe go, right, we're going to put him into the under-18s. And he can do well there. And then you have the next step, which is B team. The B team, the Lowland League is awful. And I've been to plenty of the games to be fairly confident in my judgment that I don't see the value in any Celtic player playing in that league because predominantly they're playing against part-time players, many of whom are students, some are working doors on Saturday nights, you know, some are chefs, some are hairdressers, whatever it may be. I don't think there's anything in that that is taking our players up another level. It's when you watch the Celtic B team, it's literally the majority of the time, and it's with no disrespect to any of them, because I think a lot of them are good players, but it's a bit like turning up for a game just because you have to turn up for a game. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of times you see them play like that. Whereas when they play in the Youth Champions League, for example, you can literally see it in how they move and how they play. They're more engaged. But even that in itself proves the point that there's something wrong with our youth setup, in the sense that in the Youth Champions League, we have one of the oldest squads. Most of the other clubs are playing 16, 17-year-olds. It's under-19s. Most ours are 19 or 18, and on that limit. So they're playing against guys who are a year, 2 years younger than them. And those clubs who are doing that, their players are kicking on and developing. So you're right in the sense of, you say, names like Rocco Vatta, Daniel Kelly, Ben Doak. We've obviously had others who've had maybe sort of less success. Stephen Welsh. Some of them are still at the club. Guys like Mikey Johnston, who had ample opportunities, but just never quite clicked. We do produce players, but the club's aim is to produce Champions League level players, with the exception of Ben Doak right now. And even then, we have to point out he is playing in the Championship. He's not playing in the Champions League. He is doing very well for Scotland, but he's probably the one that you'd make that argument for. And he couldn't wait to depart. And I don't believe that was necessarily entirely to do with money, but more to do with looking at exactly what we've described there as you've got B team. You can go out on loan. First team is kind of one of those things where managers talk about giving players opportunities, but I would freely admit I think it is very hard for a Celtic manager to give these players the opportunities that they're going to require and the minutes that they're going to require consistently. Because unfortunately, if a player has a bad game or two bad games, there's a lot of howling and a lot of, he's pish, basically, coming for the crowd. And it becomes a very, very difficult environment. And so I understand it from a manager's point of view where they look and they go, do I need that to add that? I think the Celtic team could carry certain young players through certain games. I think you could have two of them playing last night. I think we'd have probably still won 5 or 6 nil. To give them the amount of time consistently is very difficult. So the options around that are loan them out. That in itself brings its own difficulties. We've struggled with that. We've loaned players over to Austria. It's second division, but at least it's Matthew Anderson and Ben Summers are over there. They're getting games, they're getting minutes. They'll be improving for it. But I personally don't think the club managed that path very well. And it's entire. I think there is huge, huge glaring problems within how we go from 16 pro contract to B team to first team. And that is a whole other podcast in itself. But we do. There are good players within the Celtic youth system. I've seen plenty of them with my own eyes. I just think you're exactly right in what you say is they hit a point, and because our pathway is not well designed, in my opinion, they plateau and they get stuck, and then they play B team games and they're playing against, Bo'ness and clubs like that. And it's no disrespect to those clubs, but I just don't think those games push anybody on. Obviously, there's a lot of talk about Daniel Cummins, who's still here. Why would someone said this to me the other week, and I argue with folk about this online constantly because I absolutely hate the fact that people say get rid of the new setup. Drives me nuts.
So they see me.
If someone said to me, why is Daniel Cummins going to West Ham and not signing for Celtic? Why? I know one of the Celtic players who's left and knows family quite well. And people, it's for money, it's for money. That's the easiest argument in the world when you know don't know the situation. One of the lads left. He's not getting any more money than Celtic offered him. The reason he left was he didn't want to play B team games. And he didn't fancy going out on loan to Queen of the South. So he's seen an opportunity to go elsewhere. And when you go down south, especially if you go to a Premiership team, you've got EPL2, which is a really good standard, far, far better than anything that they'd get stuck playing up here. They obviously have got a bigger audience in terms of scouts going to watch games. And you're saying about, the scouts coming from England up here watch games. I've been under 18 games up here and B team games. More so the under 18s and under 16s, you will find at least 5 or 6 EPL scouts every single game. Willie Faulkner's one of them. He's been up here. He works for Fulham. He regularly watches our youth games. So that is a common occurrence because of Brexit, because they can't sign players under the age of 18 from outside of the UK. Scotland has now become a hunting ground for them. So if you go to an under-18s game, you will likely find that there's probably 4, 5, 6 scouts from an English Premiership team there. And that attraction, if you get that offer, is the fact that they have a pathway. They have EPL2. They have just a far better set of facilities down there. And even up here, we've got Lennox Town. They've done the redevelopment of Barfield, which I believe is meant to be finished, but I don't think it's been officially opened yet. Again, I'm quite open about the fact I think our facilities are not anywhere near the level they should be, and I include what I have seen of New Barryfield in that. Whereas if I go down south and go for a wander around the setups at Man City or Liverpool or anything like that, what you will see is elite. You'll literally feel it by walking into the place. This is a place that is designed to be a football and education facility. I don't get that feeling when I walk into Barfield. I don't get that feeling when I'm up at Lennox Stand. They feel like training facilities, but they don't feel like top class training facilities, which we've got plenty of money in the bank. I don't really. People talk about building new stands and everything else. My personal thing, because of the fact that I'm so big on the 16s, the 18s, and not so much the B team, but the youth development pathway would be to invest significant amounts of money into those facilities and to invest significant amounts of money into the people that work within those facilities to ensure that they are the best people. And that
So,
again is another thing entirely, but that would be my thing. If we're talking about youth, that would be my main focus.
a couple of things you touched on there. This interesting conversations I've had with people away from the podcast. One was you talking about the B team when we played in the Champions League Youth, that we actually had one of the oldest teams in it. And that resonates with a conversation I had with someone when I was trying to get a handle on whether Daniel Cummings has got it or not to try. And this person I was speaking to, who has seen the player similar to yourself, I was saying, well, I'm only looking at the bare numbers here. I'm not even looking in depth at these numbers. I'm just looking at the principle of he's 6 foot. He's scoring goals at the level he's at. He's scoring goals in the Champions League youth level. And he's only 18. And I always remember the person saying to me, no, he's 18. I said, exactly. That's what I was saying. He is blah, 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 and he's only 18. And this person said, no, you're missing the point. He's 18. I said, what do you mean? And if he's at the other clubs of players who then make it, they don't think he's only 18. Once he's 18, they're thinking, right, you're 18. You should now be thinking about knocking on the door of the first team, whereas we think, oh, he's only 18. So in 2, 3 years' time, he might be knocking on the door of the first team at 21. And, as an older person, you look back and, God, somebody at 30 is just a boy when you get to my age in terms of what your attitude was at that age. But the principle, and I got it, so it resonates with what you were saying about we seem to have a perception of youth, certainly for Celtic anyway, of being youth is older than in lots of other places that make it. And then the other thing was somebody who was having a scoff at me because they know that I often say if I, not that I would ever want the job because it would just be murder because too many people telling you you're doing it wrong. If I took over running Celtic tomorrow, if I became the new Celtic CEO tomorrow, first thing I would do would be hold a meeting with all the staff and say, right, Project 2035. Project 2035's been in a European final in 2035.
Well, Man United have literally just announced something very similar, which is not a European final, but winning the Premiership. They've announced Project, I think it's 2030 or whatever it is. So, this is not a negative thing, and it's not
No,
an issue that's
so
involved.
this person was like, that's a ludicrous thing. And so my attitude was, I know, I think it's in our annual statement that we make with the accounts, annual report. I think we talk about, our ambitions. And more or less, our target is to be really good, by the way, big man. I mean, whilst it's not exactly those words, it's along those lines. And if anybody who runs a business knows, if your attitude is just to do really well tomorrow, it's just to do really well. You'll do the same tomorrow as you did yesterday. And every day you will do the same tomorrow. Whereas if you then pull together and say Project 2035 is reaching a European final, right, okay, let's go for this. What are there any barriers to us reaching a European final 2035? Well, obviously there's one major barrier and it's financial. And right, okay, so we've got a financial barrier here. Can we overcome so can we, is there something we can do to change that? Well, we can change the football environment within which we operate. So it still remains within, that barrier isn't so enormous, it still remains our barrier. Okay, right. So I can't change the financial environment. So can I take steps to bridge that gap? Yes, you can. How do I take those steps to bridge those gaps? You perform better in European football, so you get better income, and through player trading. That's the only two ways, principally, that we can bridge that gap, that we need to bridge to be able to hit that target. So brilliant, I've now got that. How am I going to do that? I'm only going to achieve the better financial income from European football by having better quality players, and the better quality players are what's going to cost me the money. So how do I get that extra revenue in? It's got to be through player trading. Right, okay. So that means the most important expenditure on the football division for me then becomes the youth system and the purchasing system.
Yep.
Youth system, because we cannot spend our way to this, because that's the very barrier that we just talked about. Mm. So we're going to have to bring our own talent through. That for that talent, some of it will stick, and we will have homegrown Champions League players. I'm not saying James Forrest or Cal McGregor are or aren't Champions League players, but homegrown Champions League players who are delighted to play for Celtic for their whole career in a James Forrest, Callum McGregor fashion.
Yeah.
And we will bring through young players who are not, and we'll move on, and we'll sell them at Kieran Tierney, £25 million profit. Mm. And we will use a combination of profit from selling their players to help invest and buy a higher level of player that we brought through, that we then player trade on. So for me, you know, if the Danish striker that we wanted to sign, the 22-year-old whose name escapes me just as I speak.
Astartum.
Yes. If he is somebody, and I don't know if he is or he isn't, but if he is somebody that we've identified that at 22, we think can become a much better player for us by 25, that we could then sell on at double, triple, quadruple the money, which is what we need to do, selling Hugo for 10 and buying him for 13, effectively buying a £13 million player for 3 million, is the route to go down. And we sign him and develop him, and then we sell him for 30 million quid. This is all the principle of it.
Yeah.
And that allows us, and that's what helps us to bridge the gap to buy better players, because we can't deal with it. And we have to put money in the bank to be able to pay the wage bill and cope with FSR and all the things coming through. But for that then means you massively invest in A, the facilities. You have to have decent facilities. As you said, not training facilities, but player development facilities.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. Number two, you have to invest in better facilities, because if we are going to go out and recruit 19, 20 and 21-year-olds from abroad to say, come to Celtic to get the better education and play a better standard to allow you to move to an elite EPL team or whatever, part of the attraction is going to be the standard of facilities. Look, these are the facilities we use. So on the infrastructure, you need to spend on that. And then on the personnel, well, there's two places where we have to massively invest. That's the quality of coaching in our youth setup and the quality of scouts, so that we've given ourselves the best chances to achieve bringing through Champions League players through our own system, and we've given ourselves the best chance to buy the best quality 18 to 22-year-olds that we can. And therefore, my whole premise is, so if we then haven't reached a European final by 2035, it will not be at our end.
Yeah.
It will be external factors that we have no control over, because we have the best facilities we could possibly afford. We have the best coaches we could possibly afford. We have the best scouts we could possibly afford. We have the best computer systems for providing the data that we can possibly afford, so that we know that this guy can run at 36 kilometres an hour 14 times in a game, because that's what an elite player has to be able to achieve to be able to play at Champions League level. And we know this guy, he's weak on crossing, but 14 times a game, he's hitting 36 kilometres an hour, which is elite level speed. We can coach the crossing part of him. That type of concept, for me, is what we need to be investing in, which is pretty much what you were getting onto there.
I absolutely agree, because I think even if people look and say that idea of being European final is unrealistic, and let's be honest, it circumstances, you need a lot of things to fall your way, even if you're doing all those things, even have a sniff of that. But it can happen. It can absolutely happen. Would it require a lot of luck? Yeah. But at least if you do what you're saying now, you have a design for something. I don't feel right now, personally, and it's one of the things that annoys me about this transfer window in particular, and it goes back to the whole Jota Kyogo thing. We had a plan. Nobody's telling me that that was the plan. That's just a set of consequences that have kind of fell into place, and we've got Jota, and great, brilliant. But that's not by design. That wasn't a recruitment thing where we were looking and going, let's start watching Jota again, because we might be able to get him back, because that was highly, highly unlikely. Because when he went to Rennes, most people would think, Jota's a good player, he'll do all right there.
Yeah.
He happens upon a manager that doesn't like him. Circumstances are a big part. I've always said this. Recruiting players is not just about recruiting a good player. It's about, are they going to fit your environment? We are very, very fortunate. He fits our environment. But when he went to Rennes, you're looking at a good player. The league is kind of good for the way he wants to play. Rennes, and most of what I'd seen of them, not so much this season, but previously, are generally quite an attacking team. You're looking and going, that's quite a good fit. And it's just not worked out. That environment with that coach at that time has not worked out. And we've lucked upon that. As Kyogo's went out the door, Jota, thank you very much. But I don't feel like a lot of what we do, and I even go back to the summer transfer window and people look and go, we've done well, but Ida now doing well, and Engels is starting to kick on a bit. Having had that wee spell where Rodgers sort of took him out and said, this is quite new to him, because this is 3 games every 7 days, whereas in Germany he's playing 1 a week.
Yeah.
That takes a bit of getting used to it, and we're now seeing the benefits of that. And to me, that's a really good move by Rodgers, and quite good that he was quite open about it as well, and went, you know, I need to take the pressure off him a wee bit and allow him to breathe. He's come in the door very late in the window, which is why it drives me mad when people go, oh, you know, we've got to wait late in the window. You want a player in as early as possible to allow them to just breathe the environment, get to know their teammates, get to know the manager get to know them. But we leave everything to last minute. That's not by design. That is, if that is the design, it's stupidity, because it doesn't make any sense. There's no logic to it. And that's the thing that infuriates me about the window. It's not that we didn't sign X player, or, you know, we didn't bid enough, or this, that, and the rest, that happens. But if you've created a design and you have your ideas as to who and what you want, the sooner you know whether that's going to work or not, the better, because then you can then move on to something else. If Jota hadn't been available and we'd have sold Kyogo at Rennes and all we'd have signed was Jeffrey Schlupp, they released this, I said this to you before, and I remember, it only dawned on me the other day, they released the statement last year to apologise for the transfer window. Could you imagine what the statement would have said if we'd only signed Jeffrey Schlupp? And that's no disrespect to Jeffrey Schlupp. That's just the environment that the Celtic board have to remember that we live in, is that there's an expectation. And I think that Rodgers absolutely gets that. I think that's why he didn't say so much the other day there. He didn't try to protect anybody, but he didn't throw anybody under the bus, per se. But it just seems that a lot of things that the club does outside of what Rodgers can control just seems really fragmented.
So if you go through sort of core group of players who are playing, and this is not sort of in the know stuff, this is, I think, widely known and you know, work out. Kasper Schmeichel and Adam Ida were identified by Brendan.
Yeah.
Maeda Hitati were identified by Ange. Carter Vickers, Jota and Trusty, it was agent stuff. McGregor's Academy, I think Kuhn was identified by one of the coaching staff. Engels, we scouted.
Yep.
And Alistair Johnson was on a major tournament. Was it a major tournament that was all over the TV prior to us signing him?
Honestly, can't remember with Alistair Johnson, but at the time he was doing really well in the MLS. So even major tournament aside, he'd had a good season.
The point I'm making is two of the manager picking him out, which is very 80s stuff, it's not modern football. three of those that I mentioned, it was agent stuff, a bit like what we've just discussed just about Jota. It was agents coming to us saying, you've got a player. McGregor's the academy. One is clearly identified as being scouted, that came out of our scouting network that's gone up and right. So this is my perception of, and again, this is not particularly in the know stuff. This is just from stuff that gradually comes through from that's never countered that I also know to be the case. Peter Lawwell was very hands-on in the transfer system when he was the chief executive, and would be very hard, tough in his negotiations, and was quite happy to walk away from deals. I think the most famous one is Olivier Giroud, who we didn't sign for, I think it was £1,000 a week. There was the gap, and we walked away from signing Olivier Giroud when he was at was it Montpellier he was at?
It was that rings a bell. It was mid to lower table French
Yeah, so
football.
before he became the player that he became, we walked away from that deal for £1,000 a week because we decided that was the price and that was it. And consequently, then what would happen, and again, various sort of bits of feedback is, then what would happen is last week of the window, because we'd let deals go or people that have been identified and scouted. Last week of the window, because Peter had been in place for so long and was well connected, Peter would phone up one or two preferred agents and say, I need a striker. I need a this player. And whatever his name is, Duda Doohan, whatever his name, the Israeli agent, he would materialise Efi Ambrose or somebody like that. And there was a couple of others that would get us a player who was. He was not a spectacular player, but he was not a dreadful player because he was of a certain standard. So it didn't look utterly shit, but it does explain how we go through a raft of strikers for a period of time that aren't right. But anyway, that's the structure. And my concern is that that's the way we've operated for so long that actually the senior people at Celtic think that's the way, that's just the way football transfers work. So that what you just talked about leaving things to the last minute and all that type of stuff, my concern is that part of the problem is we have an executive group who are not intentionally doing anything wrong or not great, or because their only experience in life is that's how transfer windows have done. And then when you're watching, the Sky final day of the window stuff, and you're getting elite clubs like Chelsea and Man City signing guys patently at the very last minute, then that sort of reinforces the concept of, well, actually, that is how the transfer window works. That you muck about and you kiss a few frogs and nothing really happens, and then in the last wee day or two, it all goes crazy, and agents pop players out, and a guy falls out of that deal and lands on your lap, Jota, for example. And so my concern is, it's not an intentional mismanagement, if that's not too strong a word to use. It's just that's their belief, their only experience in life of that's how the system works.
They've been educated by someone senior to them that is the lesson is stuck,
Yeah. Do
unfortunately.
you think I'm right with that perception?
Yes, I can't say what else I want to say because I'll get into trouble, but yeah, I absolutely agree. I think that the people love to make excuses for why something goes wrong in a transfer window. Ultimately, if I would imagine that going back to last year when Brendan Rodgers came out and he said there is an issue with our recruitment, and then from that point on, Mark Lawle and I'm going to say his pal, that sounds really disingenuous, but I can't remember the guy's name, but there was two of them that left, Mark Lawle and another, and then from that point to where we are now, not a lot has changed. We have Paul Tisdale who has come to the fore. I have to say my own research into Paul Tisdale has not left me particularly impressed. There's nothing that I have seen since he's arrived or heard since he's arrived from people in and around the club, and that he spoke on a podcast that he'd done with someone else. That was before he joined Celtic, to be fair. But even upon listening to that, there was nothing that he said that particularly impressed me. And with the greatest of respect, he could be fabulous at what he does, but when you look at his history, you're looking and you're going, he's managed at Exeter for quite an extended period of time, and he had a relevant success. And I said this online the other day. Someone said to me, I said, Paul Tisdale, like, oh, he signed Ollie Watkins. No, he never. Ollie Watkins was in Exeter Academy and had been there since the age of 12. He broke through Ollie Watkins, and that in itself deserves credit. He kind of gave him his chance, and Ollie Watkins has blossomed into an absolutely fantastic striker. Arsenal are trying to burst a blood vessel to sign him late. So went off the best part of 50, 60 million pounds. But he didn't sign Ollie Watkins. So you look through Exeter and you go, okay, right, he'd done all right. He then openly said that his model at Exeter was that they didn't use scouts, it was him and someone else. They would look at players who had dropped out of top academies to see who had basically just totally fallen out and who would potentially be at the point where they're looking and going, well, no disrespect, I want to stay in professional football. And if that means signing for Exeter, I'm in. And that's perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with that idea. There are a lot of good kids that fall out of elite academies that people ignore for whatever reason, maybe hear that character's wrong or this, that and the rest, that forgetting that ultimately they are young men and that, like most young men, they will have flaws in their character. And, you know, sometimes you have to live with these things, but that doesn't change the fact that they can still be very good players. And if you're a good coach, you'll bring that on, and you'll bring them on both as a person and as a player, and those flaws will disappear. And so you move on for that. So he done that, that's fine. But it's Exeter. Who cares? Like, no disrespect. I don't mean this in a disrespectful point of view, but if you are sat looking at his CV and listening to everything he said, you'd gone, did I even know who you were before this? No. So with the greatest of respect, someone going into Celtic as director of football, who I'm looking to revolutionise, not evolution for our recruitment, because Rodgers was very clear. It was, with pardon my French, it was fucked, basically. It was in such a bad way that he openly slated it. And we were looking for someone to go in and put together a structure that was going to totally change the game to a setup that Rodgers had been used to having at the likes of Leicester, who have got a very good and professional setup from what I gather. And we went and got a guy who had managed the Exeter, who then left, managed another couple of teams, had the disastrous period of time managing. I think one of the teams, MK Don, sacked him after having the worst run that they'd ever had in their history. And then he set up a consultancy thing, doing training days for corporate companies and so on and so forth. Nobody in football is looking at this guy and going, this is the guy to revolutionise our setup. What he has done to somehow convince his way into Celtic, I do not know. I'd love to know what his sales pitch is. He must be a brilliant salesman. He should sell crap cars. But I am now looking and going, that window was quite... Rodgers has asked for one thing, a striker. And he has went in to lead that setup alongside guys like Jay Lefebvre, who's been there for a long time. And they've failed in the one real target that Rodgers said he wanted. And I look at it, and as I say, I just don't see anything in that area done by design. I think it is spectacularly, I don't know, naive by both the board and running it the way you've mentioned there and letting it go as late as it goes. You're paying a manager £3 million. He's just had a phenomenal season in Europe. You said it, the best since 71.
Yep.
If Brendan says to me that he wants a striker, I'm going to get him a striker. Mm-hmm. If that means I have to pay an extra £3 million, stuff it. He is leading the club, doing everything that could be possibly asked of him in a structure that I think, when you look at what he controls very well. But he can't control everything. I'm getting an invasion of children here, sorry.
That's right.
He can't control everything. You can't expect them to control recruitment, the academy. There are people paid significant amount of money to run those environments, to support him, to get young players into the first team setup, to allow him to look at a set of players' dossiers and go, I like these ones. These are the guys. And then it just feels like we get to every transfer window, and it was the same in the summer. If it wasn't Adam Eder, who was it going to be?
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up paying extra because we had to sign Adam Eder.
But we now know. I mean, Atlanta United come in with a 12 million pound bid for Kyogo at 40 grand a week.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the only striker. So our only option Because obviously there's a possibility that Kyogo says no. I mean, he's unlikely because he's not that type of person, but there is a risk that Kyogo says no.
No, don't
And
do us
so,
for a couple of months.
yeah, so we had to then get a striker in. And then we're backed into a corner. And that's why I've had, when people have been debating whether Ida was the player we should have spent that money on, Ida was a player who proved to us that he could play and score crucial goals for us in big games domestically. He proved he could do that. He did it against Motherwell, he did it against Hibs, and he did it against Rangers twice. So that demonstrated he's a player that we should be looking to take on board. That's the way I looked at it. And it's not his fault, or actually the football division's fault, that by poor negotiations he went from 6 million to 9 million. It's frustrated me the first half of the season. I took great delight in messaging people today that I've worked out that Adam Ida scoring a goal every 1.38 games at the moment this season. So it's hardly end of the world stuff from. But anyway. And if we'd bought him for 6 million quid, people would have said, yeah, 6 million quid, that's pretty good. And then if he wasn't scoring every single week as he went through that patch, when people would have said, people, there wouldn't, I don't think there would have been the level of criticism. So in some ways, the extra focus that has come on Ingles and Eder in particular is unfair on those players because it's come as a consequence of that thing that you've just said. If we've got to the last week of the summer window and gone, no, we're just going to have to spend what we need to spend to get these guys in.
It's an unnecessary pressure put upon the players by us.
Yep.
And it's an unnecessary pressure put on Rodgers by us, because every manager, I don't care what anybody says, everybody, oh, you can leave it as late as you want. No, nonsense. Every manager in the land says, I want my players in early because I want pre-season. I want them to learn the roles that I expect them to play. I need them to have that time where they get up to the level of fitness that we as a club require. What we require is different from what Norwich require. It's different from what Augsburg requires. Every club is slightly different because we all play different styles of football. We all have different demands. And then learning the role is huge. I think I said this at the time, Matt O'Riley, before he left, to me, was purring like a Rolls Royce. It was phenomenal to watch. And it was no surprise that that came in the season where the majority of the team, I don't think the majority of the team were that particularly great that season, but he stood out by a mile in the Champions League and in the league. And he had that period under Rodgers where it was like something has clicked. This is what he wants me to do, and I'm loving this. This is me. Like, I'm getting loads of the ball. I'm getting to express myself. I am very much aware of what Brendan Rodgers is asking me to do here, and I am happy as Larry. Give me the ball, I'll do the business. And I think you've seen that with Kuhn this season. Last season he came in and he had the difficulty with injuries and the teeth thing and whatnot. But pre-season kicks in, confidence goes up. The whole team was playing quite well in pre-season. Obviously they thumped Chelsea and things like that, and you're going, just that freedom to just get into your groove, get going. But Ingles and Ida, the season had started. And so you're asking, and I said this at the time, and I stick by it. I wouldn't have paid £30 million for Ingles, and that's no disrespect to Ingles because he is a good player. I just felt that was an unnecessary pressure to put on a guy who I'd only really played one full season with Augsburg, and there's a huge difference between playing from Augsburg to playing in front of 60,000, where this sort of idea, and unfortunately some people see that figure of 30 million and go, I expect you to be prime Zidane in Scottish football. I expect you to be rainbow flicking folk and banging one in the top corner. Some people have that mentality. To me, I just want to see him have a good solid season, and I think he will kick on next season. And the determining factor as to how successful he will be will ultimately, like any player who plays for us now, come down to how well do you play against Rangers and Champions League. Champions League this season, he's done all right. I wouldn't say he's been great. He's had some good games, had a few that were all right. Dortmund, I just write off for everybody. Everybody was honking that night. But how he kicks on next season will be the telling factor as to sort of what sort of clubs look at him next. And we all know that, you know, that is the end game, that we will likely look to sell him at some point in the line, and he will want to progress his career in that way, and that's fine. But I just think you want to give players the best opportunity, and if that means, you know, having to pay a wee bit extra to get them in a wee bit earlier, or ironically, in this case, it would have been paying less to get them in earlier, but because we faffed about so long, we end up paying more because we never had a choice, because we'd lost Matt O'Reilly had went, and obviously Ida had done well, and we never had any other striker options. So I kind of, yeah, I just don't see the logic to it. And you're saying you often reference the perception. I perceive it very similar to you, but I just look at it and go, it doesn't take someone inside the club to tell me that something's wrong or not. Just logically listen to what is around you. Your manager is saying, I need a striker. And that'll be my big takeaway from the bugbear from this window is, he has openly said, and he's openly said, we've known for 5-6 months. And between whoever it's been, whether it's Tisdale, whether it's Jay Lefebvre, whether it's the board maybe not offering someone enough money, somewhere in that chain, there's fractures, and someone needs to go through it and identify where they are and either remove the people that are causing them, if it is people causing them, which in our history we've known to happen. Peter Law, quite famous for it, as you say. Marion Schved always sticks out in my mind, where the Peter Law thing where you sign Marion Schved and Rodgers goes on the radio 24 hours later and goes, I didn't need a winger. But like, why have you given me this guy? Like, who gave me this guy? And they go, well, it was Peter Law. Well, with the greatest respect, that's just awful. And as you say, this board, and even this recruitment team, for the most part, have been there for quite a long time. A few of them are obviously newer. But the senior figures within it are either, with the exception of Mr. Dr. I can't say it. I'm not calling him Dr. Football. That's a fucking ridiculous moniker. Paul Tisdale is coming with his caps, and you've got other people who've been there for a long period of time. And is that the problem? That a lot of these people, whether it's been in the academy, whether it's loads of people who've been in the club for an eternity, and you look and you go, are they the best at what they do? Nah. Not from the outside. And logically, and the perception that people have, you could come up with a million examples. And I just feel that, as I say, my biggest disappointment with this window, I'm not angry about not signing Kvistgaarden or Orchester or whoever. I am angry at the fact that I look at the club and I go, I think you're at 60%, 70% of what you could be.
That's my issue. I often say to people, it's really difficult because you don't know. We are winning trophies in a way that I've never known in my life. We had just off our best run in European football for 50 years. We've won two trophies this season and high probability of yet another treble. To then turn around and go, and we're just not very good. It just sounds rubbish.
I think that is the separation, is you look at the team and the manager and you go, are they doing, is Brendan getting the best out of what he's got? And the answer is absolutely 100% yes. And I say that as someone, I'm not particularly a big fan of Brendan. I don't dislike Brendan. I have come to the conclusion after Brendan the first time in Ange that managers are just managers. And so if they're doing well, great, and you applaud them. And if they're doing badly, then you recognise that and you know, if they're doing well and someone steals them, that is now just football. Too much heartache, I think. I say that firmly, tongue-in-cheek. But I look at him and I just go, Brendan's job is team on pitch, win games, win trophies, domestically certainly, and give us opportunities and make us compete in Europe. And that was the only thing I even going back to when we'd done the Champions League podcast, when the draw came out and we're discussing all different teams, was not, I want us to get, you know, 15 points or this or this, that. I want us to compete. I don't want us to be like Bratislava and Young Boys sat on nil point at the end of it. But if you looked at European competition and go, you go into games and if we'd have got a nightmare draw, as long as we had competed and showed that we were improving, that would have been enough. the fact that he then went well beyond that and we got some marvellous results. Dortmund aside, it was a really good campaign, and people will say, oh, luck of the draw, and you got Young Boys and Bratislava. Young Boys took Inter Milan really close. Young Boys are not a bad team. They're just in a bad place right now. Normally, we didn't get that luck of the draw. Normally, we get the team who have been on the really bad run. They fired their manager. They've gotten a new guy. And then all of a sudden, they're absolutely brilliant. Like Red Bull, Rangers hammer them. And then a couple of months later, we get them. They've got Marco Rose as manager, who seems to have a real hatred of us because he always seems to win up until this year, thank God. But we normally get that luck. This year, we got a wee bit of luck in our way and we took advantage of it. Were we great in all those games? No. But we got through. That is a marvellous achievement. And Bayern Munich, as big and as daunting as they are as a super club, that is not an impossible game to win. Feyenoord showed that Bayern Munich have weaknesses. There was other teams in the Champions League, I can't remember offhand, but Bayern Munich played quite a high line. If you can get in behind that, and we have players who can get in behind, you know, you just need that bit of luck. Do well in the home game. Try and eke anything out of the home game. Go away and, you know, if we get beat, we get beat. It's expected. But there's an opportunity. And we've given ourselves the opportunity. Brendan's gave us that opportunity. And yet we don't give him a striker.
Yeah. So that's us analyse the football and the scouting division to death. You've got youngsters champing at the door there. So very quickly, we've got the... I'm just going to quickly cover Raith Rovers game that's on Saturday, as we record this on Thursday night. We've got the Raith Rovers game on Saturday. And just in a couple of minutes. Can't decide whether Brendan's going to play, what team he's going to play, because my gut feel is you can't play Ida. You can play Maeda because he's not going to play for the Bayern game. In terms of the certain players you've got to protect because they've got to play in the Bayern game, because if Aida gets injured...
Yeah,
you could
never hear the end of it.
Yeah, so I can't decide whether he's then going to play a whole team of fringe players, but equally, on the two or three occasions he's done it since he's come back, he has said, and we've not played well, he has said, that's on me, that's my fault, you cannot expect to make six, seven changes and for the team to play well. And I've learned that we can do that. So there's another part of me says, he won't make wholesale changes of the teams virtually at a different level. What's your expectations? Because I can persuade myself either way.
My expectations are that there will be changes, because I just think it's one of those things where logically, in his head, Bayern Munich at home, some people might want to write off, but I think that he'll be sat going, if I can get something at home, anything at home, then you get yourself a wee chance. If we were to get thumped home, then you know you don't worry about that. But and up until that game comes, you can go, that's an opportunity. So I would expect changes. I would expect Bernardo to play. I would like to see Johnny Kenny play. Because I think the other part is, as much as you want to protect Ida for going into the Bayern Munich game, you also want to have Johnny Kenny had a good 80, 90 minutes in his legs, that just if something happens in that game, if he needs to come on, that he has had those minutes in his leg, because it'll be at least a month since he's last played a good 90 minutes. So match sharpness is a thing for him. So I'd like to see him play. And then beyond that, I think it'll just be the usual changes. Dane Murray might play. It'd be good. And as I say, I think minutes for him are golden right now, especially because we've taken him away for the loan deal. Bernardo, probably Luke McCowan. I think you will see a strong team, but I think it'll be predominantly guys who have been on the bench who will roll into the first team. I don't think Carter Vickers will play because he's obviously conscious of the fact that since he had his operation, he's still had periods where he's kind of had little niggles or little bits and pieces. The one that's interesting
around every Champions League game, only around Champions League games.
Yeah, the one that's interesting for me, and he's never done it to date, but when we signed him, the word on the street, so to speak, was that Schmeichel's our league goalkeeper and our Champions League goalkeeper, and Sinisalo is the cup goalkeeper. That's never happened to date. I wonder if that will happen.
Well, I did wonder at the beginning of the season why it didn't happen. It's because he just wanted Schmeichel to be getting the games with Celtic in the League Cups right at the beginning, and he just wanted, you know, he wanted Schmeichel to bed himself into the team and become Celtic's goalkeeper. Well,
a friend of mine got a little bit starstruck during the week because he's seen Kasper obviously had a day or two off and was over in Copenhagen, and my mate was getting on the flight that Kasper was coming off, and he's like, I'm a grown man, but I really want to go and say hi. I was like, yeah, I can understand that. He's done really well. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see if Sinisalo would maybe get a game. Or we have a lot of other young goalkeepers who are currently sat not doing very much because they've not been loaned out. Josh Clark, who was at Ayr last year, done quite well at Ayr, and I believe he's still sort of in and around things. He's not playing with the B team. And then, yeah, Sinisalo. Schlupp would probably be an ideal candidate to play at least an hour. Yeah. Same again, because of the fact that he's not had a lot of minutes this season. And you're looking and going, if we need a call upon him, you don't want to be throwing him in off the back of...
Jota's another one who needs minutes in his legs.
Yeah. Jota surprised me with how fresh he's kind of... I don't know if it's just the...
Yeah, it's just the
jubilation of adrenaline kind of carrying. Yeah, adrenaline's carrying him. I'm surprised, pleasantly surprised. I think someone made the point. He does look quite thin, but... You know, he's looked good. And there's a big George Michael fan. He was in that sense as well. But I think I expect some of the fringe guys who you have to look and go, if we needed to throw them on against Bayern Munich, if Greg Taylor was to get, touch wood, like none of this will happen, but if anybody was to get a knock, if Greg Taylor was to get a knock, you want these guys to at least have an hour of something in them in the lead up to it. And Schlupp's been a substitute for Palace all season long.
Yeah.
And as I say, Johnny Kenny's went the best part of a month. Yeah, these are players that we might need, even if we need 15 minutes out of them at the end of the game just for the energy, then I would rather they got that 15 minutes having had a bit of match sharpness put into them by playing an hour or so against Wraith, which some people might see as disrespectful, but, you know, it's this mad part of the season. We've had all these games back to back to back. We had the most games between December and then the Champions League phase at any other team in Europe, pretty much. And we're still in that sort of phase because the Dundee game got cancelled. So that was the only sort of minor break. And even then, they couldn't have trained that weekend because it was obviously Gale first win. So, yeah, we've had very limited time to give some of these guys a rest. So I would like to see a changed team. I don't necessarily think that will result in the greatest football, but, you know,
when is it
should
mass.
Be enough to, yeah, next round, and you know, with no sort of major shock result, but I think we'll be fine.
All right, well, with that, I'll say, Russell, thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address, and then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and this is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.